The Hannah Gray Mayor of Bromley podcast. Championing small businesses. Hannah Gray has been serving the community as a local government councillor for several years. She was nominated to be the 2020-2021 Mayor of the London Borough of Bromley at the height of the COVID pandemic in March 2020. Hannah has for many years been known as one of South London's most prolific small and medium enterprise networkers. Before becoming Mayor, Hannah was Bromley's business champion, promoting and helping entrepreneurs achieve their business ambitions. She's now dedicated to helping promote SMEs, charities, and voluntary organizations to learn from their experiences for the benefit of all.
So today I am joined by Sam Jones, really pleased because Sam is right on the front line. She's a paramedic based in Croydon, but does Croydon and Bromley and actually probably everywhere else that she gets called out to, and also runs her company as a co-director, which is first aid for staff. So we're going to get a good update on what happens in the paramedic world and also how you can learn to help people's lives. So welcome, Sam, to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Hannah. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, it's great that you're with us. And we have such huge respect for everybody on the front line. I know that you've been working extremely hard. You've been working some of the COVID clinics as well, and you've been going out to see people. So I know that it's been really tough time, but I'm really grateful for you to join us today because I know that you also have a mission with your first aid for staff for people to be able to help each other and learn what they're doing. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, absolutely, Hannah, most definitely. We are on a mission. We want to get as many people in the Bromley and Croydon area trained as we possibly can. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit later in a little bit more detail.
But as a paramedic, you've been called out a lot, I would imagine, during this period. Have there been difficulties getting to people? Because, I mean, COVID has taken up an awful lot of everyone's time. It's been a terrible time. Have you been called out to what you would call your normal call-outs during this time as well?
We have. We've seen quite a variety of calls. I think initially when we had the initial lockdown last March, a lot of people were frightened to access ambulance services. They were frightened to go to hospital. So we did see a little bit of a decline in those general calls that we would normally go out to. There was still a fear, even with COVID, people phoning for an ambulance. Were they going to go into hospital? Would they end up on a ventilator? Wouldn't they come out? And it's been an awful time. It's been stressful for ambulance, for us as crews. It's been stressful for the hospital staff. The patients have had so much anxiety, and the general public as well.
Yeah,
it's been a real challenging time.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. But with a normal call out, I mean, I don't suppose there is anything like normal in your world at all. But what's the kind of range of stuff that you'd go out to help people with? I'd imagine you get sort of chest pains or heart attacks or collapses. But do you get other lesser but still important call outs as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We do. We get. The thing is, when we get called out, we might look at that call that comes through and think, why are they calling an ambulance? Because it seems like a real trivial thing. I went out to a lad a few years ago. He was 18 and he came down on our computer in the ambulance, his headache. And the person I was working with said, headache? He's 18. Why is he phoning for an ambulance? And I said, well, don't know. Let's find out when we get there. So we arrived and he was mortified that he'd called. And he said, I'm so sorry. I wouldn't normally have called an ambulance. He said, but my auntie died 3 weeks ago. She was in her 40s. She had a massive headache and it led on to having a stroke. So he'd never had a headache before.
Gosh.
So for him, it was massive, and there's always a story, generally a story behind why that person has thought that their ailment or their condition at that time that we might not see as important is important to them. And I think that's a really important thing as well when we're working as paramedics, that we have to, yes, we might go out to jobs and think, that's a bit of a silly thing to phone an ambulance for. But at that time, it's massive in that person's world.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I'd imagine different times of day causes different concerns. So, if you have hurt yourself in the middle of the night and it's pitch black and there's no one around and you're on your own, that would be far more frightening than if you had a bit of a trip and a fall and you can brush yourself off at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I think the time of day probably has an effect on people's worry.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the night time is always the worst time for everyone. Mental health, we get a lot of call outs in the evening because when you're at home, you know, during the daytime, you can busy yourself. You can watch the television. You can go out for a walk. At night time, there's less for you to be able to do, especially if you're in a house with lots of people sleeping. You maybe don't want to get up. You don't want to go and watch the television. So you sit there in your bedroom, in your bed, and you have thoughts running through your head. So we get a lot of calls, mental health calls at night as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about
the
mental health side of it. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of what we do, our job has changed over the years. You know, our job has changed from going out to those cardiac arrests, going out to the heart attacks, going out to what you would consider, you know, a serious condition. You know, when I was a kid, you wouldn't phone an ambulance unless your leg had fallen off. But now we're social workers, we're, you know, relationship help, you know, all those things that we do that aren't just about that heart attack, that cardiac arrest, that stroke. So our job has changed an awful lot over the years.
Yes, because you've been a paramedic. We mentioned this on the taster, but of course it's well worth mentioning it now, for about 14 years, haven't you?
Yes, with London. Yeah, so I qualified 14 years ago with London. Prior to that, I worked as a technician. So I did my ambulance technician training privately, and I worked in the private sector within TV and film as a medical person to look after people whilst they were filming. Yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast, because I'm sure people want to know about behind the scenes. So talking about behind the scenes, before we move on to your first aid for staff, because I know that it is an absolute passion of yours, and I already admitted in the taster that I did do my first aid, but with St John's Ambulance, and that was a few years ago. So I do need to come and have a refresher with you, because I did have an incident where, luckily, I still remembered what I was taught, and somebody had collapsed on the floor, and I was able to help them, or at least I felt assured enough to be able to help them rather than just standing there and not knowing what to do. But before we get on to all of your first aid stuff, let's have a behind the scene little chat about paramedics, because people always want to know about behind the scene. So do you sit around in the ambulance drinking tea? Is that what happens?
wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be lovely to sit? And we are very conscious of the fact that if we are outside a patient's house that's a non-conveyed, so that's someone who's not taken to hospital, we might have made a drink at station and it's stone cold and it's sitting in our coffee mug. And whilst we're doing our paperwork, we're drinking the tea, you know, that we made 4 hours ago. But no, when we arrive at station, we generally arrive before our start time. You prep your vehicle, so you make sure you have everything that you need. You get your drugs. You get everything on board the ambulance. Then you get your first job, which is usually around about your start time, maybe a couple of minutes later. You go out, and then if you're on a 12-hour shift, you're out for 12 hours, and you come back at the end of that shift. So a lot of the time people think that we work out of hospitals. They'll say, oh, which hospital are you based at? We're not based at a hospital, but they'll see us leaving the hospital on blue lights going to another job, which is why they think that we're based at hospitals, but we actually have designated ambulance stations.
And you also, as you say, don't necessarily come back to the station. So this was a new one for me. I mean, as the Mayor of Bromley, I was really privileged to go around and thank a lot of our frontline services, because they are doing amazing jobs. And I did go to Bromley Ambulance Station, which I actually, ashamedly, did not realise was a huge hub in the southeast. The training and the vehicles, and it's amazing. And I got shown into the room where they keep all of the drugs and how you have to sign them in and sign them out, get the pack and put it in the ambulance. It was fascinating behind the scenes. But they said, as you've just said, that you'll start, you know, a few minutes after your shift, and then you go from place to place to place. So you, if you do take a patient, you'll take them to the nearest hospital that you're told is the right one that you can get somebody into. And then you'll go from there to another one. And then you, so you could end up going all around. I think it's Croydon and Bromley mostly that you work in. But you might go even further afield than that if that's where the hospital is that you can take the person to. So you don't just keep going backwards and forwards to the hospital or the same hospital or your ambulance station, do you?
No, not at all, not at all. And I remember an early shift, and we went to a patient who's having chest pain. So because we don't take to the nearest, depending on what your nearest is, but for us at Croydon, we wouldn't take to our nearest hospital. So he went into St George's. From St George's, we then got a job to West London somewhere. So we took into a hospital. I didn't have any clue. I had no idea where I was. Then from there, by the end of my shift, we ended up in Barnet in Hertfordshire, and we started our shift in Croydon. And then we had to get all the way back from Barnet back to Croydon. So yes, it has London ambulance down the side of the vehicle, so you could go anywhere within the London area.
I hadn't realised it's quite that far-fetched, but yeah, it must be. You never know where you're going to go, do you? Never know where you're going to end up.
No.
But we are really grateful for everything that you do. I know I've had to call the ambulance service out on a couple of occasions for members of the family, and they're always so marvellous when they turn up and so understanding. It's yeah, fantastic. We couldn't do without you. You're amazing. And I know that your co-directors are also in the ambulance service, aren't they? They're also paramedics.
Yes. We started our business 5 years ago. I'd been teaching in the Croydon and Bromley area for the last 21 years, and I was looking to set up my own company. The company that I was working for at the time had a few clients in Croydon, but they didn't want to continue serving that area. So they said, well, the easiest thing is if you set up your business, you can then look after Croydon, which is what we did. And at the time, Janine and Gemma were thinking about doing something similar with first aid. And I said, well, this is silly, you know, because I've got the experience of teaching. We've got contacts already. It seems daft that we're going to be competing against each other. So we joined forces and First Aid for Staff was born.
That's fab. And so you, for First Aid for Staff, let's cover the kind of things that you do. So I said to you earlier, oh, you do that baby stuff, and you said yes, it's paediatric, Hannah, so that's fine, but you do training for young, because it's very different, isn't it, how you would resuscitate a baby and the things you need to look out for a baby than from a fully fledged adult, and that's what I was trying to head towards, although it didn't really make a lot of sense at the time. So but you do nurseries and the parents of kids that go to the nurseries, is that right?
Yes. So you have your early years foundation, the EYFS, and so anybody that works with children 0 to 5, they have to make sure they have paediatric training. And that's changed slightly over the years. So if you want to be within the child-adult ratio, then your staff would need to be paediatric trained. It's no longer acceptable just to have one person first aid trained in a nursery. And we can then offer those nurseries fundraisers. So we do parent courses, so they can invite their parents in. They charge a per person price, and then we give them 60% of the takings. So as long as we just cover the materials and the trainer's time, then the nursery, and we do that for schools as well. So they then get, it's a nice way of them fundraising and the parents learning a life skill.
Double win. I didn't realise that everybody had to, in a nursery, had to be trained. I thought it was still the, you know, 1 in 3 type calculation, but it's everybody in a nursery that needs to be changed. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Trained, I mean.
Yeah. That's
very interesting. So you do that, and also you work in schools, so I presume you do the same sort of fundraising offer in schools, do you? If you go in and teach the parents in the schools, that you can give them some funds for the PTA or for the school to use?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not limited to just the nurseries. Primary schools are very good because a lot of the time parents are still engaging with school. When it comes to secondary school, because the children are, or the pupils are making their own way to school, there's less parent engagement. So primary schools are very good for us. And yes, we absolutely love to do those fundraisers. And I think it's a really nice way, you know, rather than just buy a raffle ticket where yes, the school are going to make some money and there's a possibility you might win. This is just such a great way. You're helping your school, you're learning your life skills, and it's a great way of getting people interested in first aid. Because most people, you know, I've not yet met many people that wake up in the morning and think, oh, I must do a first aid course.
No.
You know, a lot of the time people think, oh, someone else will know how to do it. Or we use history, don't we? We're very reactive. We're not very proactive. We're very reactive. And we use history. Oh, I've never needed to use first aid. I won't need to use it going forward. And it's about changing that mindset. Because we're paramedics, we bring a wealth of experience. We bring lots of humour to our first aid courses. I'm very much of the opinion that if someone has come and they've had a laugh, they will remember what they've learned and they'll then go away and use those skills. And I've had colleagues from the ambulance service say to me, oh, we went to such and such a school. Their first aid was brilliant. And they said they'd done their training with you. So we know, you know, that it works. We know that people are remembering. We're giving them that confidence. We're giving them the knowledge. We're giving them, you know, the life skills that they need. And a lot of the time it is that confidence.
Yeah, yeah. And so do you have a Resus Annie then? Because that's what she was called when I did my course. Is she always called Annie or does she get different names?
Well.
I'm not going to set you off.
You don't want to know the names that she might get called, no. Resus Annie, yes, she has changed over the years. She's now gender neutral, which is great. When I first started doing first aid, I was 14 and it was through the Red Cross. And I remember the mannequins that we had, they were full size. So they had arms and legs. They were in a blue suitcase. They had these awful blue nylon tracksuits. And all the mannequins had this awful yellow nylon hair. You opened up, they were very scary. Very difficult to carry around in your car, but now we just have the mannequin, so we have the you know, just the torso, which is so much easier.
Much easier to carry around. And I know that you have some weird and wonderful stories, and we were talking about that just before the podcast, but we decided some of them maybe shouldn't come on the podcast because we don't want to scare people. But going back to your paramedic days, just for a moment, or I know you're still in your paramedic days. What I mean is going back to the stories. Is there something, I remember there was one that you did tell me and you presented me with a little jar of something. So do you want to tell that story of why you presented me with that jar of something that looked like looked like toes?
Of course. And you do realise they were never toes, don't you?
I do realise that.
You do know that they were burnt chips covered in boot polish in a jar with cotton wool around them. But they did look like toes, didn't they? They did look like toes. And we were talking about diabetes at the time. And how people, you know, people really need to be looking after themselves. People with diabetes, it can affect their limbs greatly. And if they don't look after their diabetes, if they're still eating the sugar and all the things that they know that they shouldn't be doing, it can have a disastrous effect on their eyesight and also their limbs. And yes, I had gone to a chap about 3 o'clock one Saturday morning. And he'd had foot pain for a couple of days, but hadn't accessed his GP and phoned for an ambulance. And we arrived and I said to him, my foot's really sore. And I said, well, have you looked at your foot? And he said, no. And I think he was too scared actually to have a look. So there was a part of me that thinks that he was aware of what was going on under his sock. Mm. Anyway, we took his sock off. He was a diabetic chap, didn't look after himself particularly well. Took his sock off and three of his toes came with it.
Oh, that's gory.
Not nice at all. So our job is so different. Mm. You know, we could go to somebody in the morning, I remember this, my very, very first shift. I just left training school. I was working with a lovely colleague, Helen, and it was my very first shift out in the big wide world on an ambulance. Mm-hmm. And it was the scariest day, second scariest day. And our first job was to a lady. She was giving birth, so we delivered a baby, which was amazing.
Wow.
And our last job of the day was, very sadly, was cardiac arrest. And lots of things. And that's the thing, you just have no idea what your next call is going to be.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's a very strange job.
But going back to the diabetes, I mean, you presented me with that jar. I must just explain why. Because we were discussing nutrition and diet and diabetes, and we were with a group of people that we wanted to make the point. So we wanted them to understand what we were talking about. It did freak them out a little bit, but we did explain that they were chips. So just wanted to explain, put that in context, to why on earth you would give me that. But it was, no, it was really useful. And I'm sure with your first aid courses that you do a lot of education whilst you're going along. It's not just about, you know, pumping the chest so many times and giving mouth to mouth so many times, and you do it to whatever. What song is it you do it to now? Is it Nelly the Elephant, or is it a different one?
It's Staying Alive.
Oh, Staying. Oh, well, of course, you'd remember that, really, wouldn't you? Staying Alive. Yeah. So I'm sure it's not just that, although that does make it, you know, memorable, as you were saying, but you probably do quite a lot of education whilst you're there as well on things like diet and things like diabetes, because you'll tell stories that of where you've been and what you've been called out to, where people really will learn their lesson from the stories that you tell.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what makes us different from a lot of first aid courses out there, is because we're paramedics, because we have that experience. I have sat on first aid courses before, just to see what other trainers are teaching, and people that don't have any medical experience. And I've heard people say, you know, what's it like to do resus? And the trainer has said, well, it's just like this. And you think, really? We're jumping around on a plastic mannequin. We are not plastic. We are very different. So, yes, so from an educational point of view, we can tell people exactly what it's going to be like. We tell people things that aren't in the first aid book. You know, a heart attack is rarely going to be textbook. We talk about heart disease. We talk about how people can help themselves and avoid heart disease. We educate people on the use of ambulances. You know, if you sat on a first aid course where you don't have somebody who's medically trained or a paramedic who's teaching that course, you know, in a first aid book, everything says phone 999, but that's not appropriate. So we're very lucky that we can educate people, not just about first aid, but the wider context. And yes, as you say, we can talk about diabetes in great detail. We can tell them how to avoid type 2 diabetes. So all those things. So they're getting very good value for money when they come on a first aid course for us. It's not just textbook.
Yeah, no, I know your personality as well, so I know that it would be a really good, fun day. So how long are the courses, generally speaking? How long do people sign themselves up for? Because I know you work, as we said, with children, but you also work with companies. You work with, you were saying, the fostering team looked after children in Bromley, and schools and charities. I mean, you do this work with lots of different organisations. So if they wanted you to come and do a course for their staff, how long would that take?
So it could take anything from 3 hours to 3 days. It really depends upon what they want. So for some schools, we'll do a one-day course. We can do the one-day emergency first aid at work, but we can also do a one-day emergency first aid for schools. So that's slightly different, and that would be ideal for lunchtime supervisors, let's say, because it takes out the things that they are more likely to deal with in their work at school. So we can cover, and we can do bespoke courses as well. We did a bespoke course for Go The Attend Link. They were looking to have some staff trained. After we met with them, we learned about the business. It took about 9 months to learn all about the train business, what they wanted to achieve. And they had quite often had their figures in the red. So when they were looking at their figures for cancellations and delays on trains, they weren't scoring particularly well because the trains were being delayed and cancelled for too long whilst they were trying to wait for ambulances to come to deal with those passengers who were unwell. So I went away and I wrote a bespoke training course for them, a passenger ill on train course, and we then trained 1,500 members of staff across 2 years, giving them a one-day training course.
Golly.
So now there are an awful lot of platform staff, train staff, who can now render aid. And we had some lovely feedback, actually, from one of the branch managers. And she came on the course and she said, I've got to come because I've heard such good feedback from all our staff about the course. And I said, well, that's really lovely. She said, yes, but I wanted to tell you about this one particular chap. who was new to the business. He came on our first day course and he said, I'm really worried because I'm a passenger host. That means that I could be on the train, the driver obviously at one end, but I could be on the train and I'd be the only person on this train responsible for all these passengers. And he said, I'm really worried that somebody becomes ill on my train. And I said, well, that's why you're here, darling, because we're going to give you that confidence. We're going to give you those skills. I'm going to give you that knowledge. And the very next day he was back at work. He dealt with a 27-year-old female who went unconscious on his train. Oh. And the feedback that they got was that if he hadn't been on our training, if he hadn't have learnt the skills he had learnt, she would have died.
Oh my goodness.
You know, so that for us was the reason why we did that course. We've saved a life.
Yeah.
And it happens when you're working with the public. They're very unpredictable. You know, you have absolutely no idea at any time. But what we were very lucky, what we were very grateful for, were the figures as well. Not only had we trained 1,500 members of staff, but it actually made a difference. And for them as a business, it meant that their delays and their cancellations, they were no longer in the red. They were in the green, so they were limiting the amount of time that the trains were being held because those staff were able to effectively deal with those passengers who'd become unwell.
Yeah, that's great on every level, isn't it? The business is happy, but also people's lives are being saved. That's the most important thing. Now tell me, do you train people on using defibrillators, or do we just have to follow the instructions in the box? I mean, it frightens the living daylights out of me because I've never used one, and I know that, for instance, Biggin Hill Airport has sponsored the purchase of some of them in and around Biggin Hill, and I was talking to a paramedic there who knows you very well, by the way, and she is concerned that the general public wouldn't know how to use the defibrillator, although apparently they're very simple. But is that something that you cover on a bespoke course if somebody wanted to know that?
Yes, we cover it on all our courses. So if you came and did a 3-hour basic life support course, we would show you how to use a defib. And yes, they do. They are very easy to use. They talk to you. So you should just be able to open it. It will talk you through what you need to do. Now, we always recommend that people have training because once you've had training, you're more confident. And there are a few safety aspects that we go through with you as well. So we would always recommend training. But yes, they are very simple to use. You'll have to come on one of our courses, Hannah, and have a look.
I will. I know I will. It's been long since I've done it. But yeah, no, of course. Of course I will. So this has been really interesting, and it's lovely for people to know that you're there, both in both capacities, you know, in your paramedic capacity and in your first aid for staff, and that they can book you and book your team to do standard courses, bespoke courses, and people could really have the confidence to save lives. I mean, everybody wants to do something, but you're so frightened that you might be doing the wrong thing. You could often stand there really scared, not knowing what to do. So it's so important that everybody has a go and learns these things. And I also, on a slightly different note, because believe it or not, we're getting towards the end of the time allocated, which is crazy. I could talk to you for hours.
I could spend the next hour talking to you.
But I also know, just taking yourself on a slight tangent, that you also, on a sideline personally, you're into your aromatherapy. I know that because I have your lovely creams and your hand creams and all the other things. In fact, I bought a few for my friends for Christmas. But I know you do that. And so do you want to tell us a little bit about your aromatherapy and what you're doing at the moment? Because I think you're featuring on some lady's website at the moment, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes. So I qualified 21 years ago as an aromatherapist. I'd always had an interest, and it was something that I was using personally. And then a few of my family members said, oh, you know, so-and-so's got this wrong. Is there anything we could use? And interestingly, actually, when I was listening to the podcast with yourself and Jenny, you mentioned about alternative therapy.
Oh, I know.
And now, alternative therapies do exist. They do exist, but I'm complementary. So I complement Western society, you know, Western medicine. as opposed to being alternative.
Yeah, well, I got it wrong. You know? I got told off by somebody else because I thought I was using the right term and I didn't understand. You know, I wouldn't do it ever on purpose. So your complementary therapy, yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay. But the difference between myself and alternative therapist, as a complementary therapist, I complement Western medicine. So if you broke your arm, no amount of essential oils that I can rub onto your arm is going to fix your broken bone.
Yeah.
You need to go to hospital. Whereas a complementary therapist, I can complement that by making you up an oil that might help with pain relief, or it might help to reduce the stress that you're experiencing. So, you know, alternative and complementary is very, very different. But I was making up some lotions and potions for friends, and they were having great results. And they said, you know, can you make more? Or, you know, my best friend's friend. And I thought, well, hang on a second. You know, this is getting outside of my kind of area that I wanted to concentrate on. I thought, well, how do I do this correctly? How do I do this so that I'm insured? I know what I'm talking about. So I qualify as an aromatherapist. Therapist. And it's growing. Yeah. But during lockdown, I'm not grateful to lockdown at all, because we've lost some dear, dear colleagues and friends, and it's been horrific, but it has opened up some opportunities, and people have connected with their health a little bit more, and those complementary therapies. And I've been using a lot more products with people for anxiety, for stress, for their hands because they're sore because of hand sanitizer. But I was contacted by a lady called Kate Spencer, who's an amazing lady. She's an author, she's a spiritual coach. She's such a lovely, lovely lady. And she contacted me before Christmas and asked if I would be a resident aromatherapist for her during the month of March on her Facebook group. So she has a separate group called the Life and Soul Academy. And in there are lots of teachings, lots of meditations. I mean, it's a lovely group of like-minded people, and it's a safe space. You know, it's lovely. And so that's what I've been doing since the beginning of March. So I'm in her group on a daily basis. We've looked at the history of aromatherapy. We've looked at the safety of aromatherapy. We've looked at oils that we don't touch because they're toxic. Last week, we looked at the immune system and how we can support our immune system using aromatherapy. And this week, it's all about sleep, being National Sleep Week, Awareness Week.
Yes, could do with some sleep. I don't get much sleep with everything that I do. But no, we could definitely do. And it's good quality sleep as well, isn't it? So what a lovely thing for you to do. I mean, this is a whole new podcast. I mean, we do another one on aromatherapy with you. But, you know, going back, so you've got your intense daily paramedic work that you do intensely, and you've got your first aid for staff where you're teaching people to save lives independently of yourselves and be capable and confident in looking after people. That is one whole, those completely different worlds. And then you have another world which is very complimentary, it seems very calm. You actually change slightly when you start talking about your aromatherapy. So I know that's a different bubble, a different world for you. So it's wonderful you've got all of these different elements. And as I said, I think aromatherapy could be another wonderful podcast. So as we carry on with this, because I will be carrying on after I am mayor, I'll be doing my own podcast, carrying on. We'll have you on and talk about that, because I'm sure people would be very interested. So now I'll just...
Oh, yeah, great.
If I may, I'll just finish off with a last couple of little more light-hearted questions that I generally ask everyone, just to get a little bit of an insight into you a little bit more, although I know that you've got a lovely little wicked sense of humour that we've already had a little element of. But if you had to say you were frightened of something, because I know you have to be really brave in the work that you do. I mean, you have to be brave to go into those situations. You never know what you're going to meet behind that door. You never know what you're going to find on the pavement. So you generally have to be very strong inside. But if you were fearful of something, what would it be that you, or what is it that you are frightened of?
Heights.
Oh, yes, I agree.
I can go two rungs of a ladder and no more. Yeah, I can sit in an aeroplane quite happily and fly abroad somewhere. But yeah, heights are a definite thing. And spiders and snakes, oh my goodness me, no. Snakes, yeah, I can't deal with those at all. Spiders, I can just about put a glass over them and keep them there until someone else comes home to remove them. But I do keep an eye on them to make sure they're still running around, and I do worry, and I do lift up the edge every so to let some air in so they don't die.
Oh, yeah, because that would be, yeah, a little ironic, wouldn't it? But, I'm not keen on snakes, but I've kind of got over that over the years. It was a really big thing for me. I froze rigid in the house at London Zoo, you know, in the house, reptile house. Awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And heights, yeah, I got somewhat paralysed at the top of the Eiffel Tower. So, yeah, I agree with you, but you can work on them, can't you? I mean, all of our fears, people are suffering from a lot of fears in lockdown because life has changed so drastically for them. So, but you can work on them, can't you? There are ways around these things, and I'm sure aromatherapy can help in many ways, as well as, you know, mindfulness and coaching. So, yeah. I mean, let's hope that you don't have to go to somebody on top of a roof somewhere. That wouldn't work out too well, would it? But you do have other people with you, don't you? So you wouldn't have to go up the ladder if somebody had a heart attack on a roof. Someone else could go up the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I'm a fear of tight spaces as well. So when we did our training to go undertrained, that was the scariest because you're an enclosed, but you've got your... No,
that's not nice.
Makes me come all over hot thinking about it. Yes, you are. You know, I don't ever work in a car, so I'm never on my own. I'm always with somebody in an ambulance, and you know, so yeah, there is somebody else.
People will be fine. We don't need to worry about that bit. People will be fine.
No, don't need to worry about that at all. They will be fine. And we have our lovely fire brigade as well that like climbing ladders.
They do. They do. Absolutely they do. But I tell you, Colin, my consort, ex-fireman, doesn't like tight spaces. I mean, I think because of the job, because of being a fireman, doesn't like them. He can do it, you know. I mean, and I'm sure there's things that you could do if you really had to do them, whether you like them or not. I'm sure of it because the training just takes over. But he's not very keen. If he doesn't have to go into a tight space, he'd rather not. So on a completely different light note, then I always ask this question, and I always invite myself. So obviously, I'm coming to this dinner party because I have to be there. This is a great way to get yourself invited to every dinner party anyone ever has. But
I know, it's fabulous. Your list is huge.
It is now.
You have to have the great hall, won't you, for your dinner party?
I will. So at a dinner party that you are going to have, and hopefully I'll get an invite, who would you invite? Who would you find interesting or important enough, past and present, for you to invite round your dinner party table?
Now, I did actually think about this because I thought this question might come up. And Rosie said to me, she said, "Well, who would you invite, Mum?" And I said, "Well, Robbie Williams would definitely be up there." And she went, "Oh." And then I said, "Yeah, but I've already had tea with him. Ooh. So I don't need to invite him again to the dinner party." But actually, my granddad, he died when I was three, and he's played a huge role in my life. He was an amazing man. He was an artist, he was an author, he was a pathologist, very, very, very clever man, very clever. And I think that's where my medical side has come from. And if I could have another person, be very greedy and have another person, it would be my great-granddad, who I never met. He was the first master blender of Dewar's whiskey. So I think that's where I get my aromatherapy from.
It's not exactly whiskey, though, is it?
You can't. No, but it's still. He was a nose.
Yes.
He was a nose for Dewar's whiskey. But he had to have a very good nose. And you need a good nose in aromatherapy. You don't need a good nose as a paramedic, and that's my downside sometimes.
Oh.
My nose does. I can smell things at the bottom of the car before I even get to the front door and just think, no, this isn't good.
Oh, no, that's not good. Let's go back to the whiskey. That's much better. So,
but
yes.
they would be my two, my great-granddad and my granddad. I would, I'd love to have them round the table, and I think there'd be an awful lot more I could learn from them.
Oh, fascinating. They'd be fascinating. I bet they've got your sense of humour. I bet that's come down the line as well. That would be a fantastic dinner, wouldn't it? That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And you could invite Robbie Williams. I haven't met him. You might have had tea with him, but I haven't.
Oh, okay. We'll add him to the dinner party as well, then.
That sounds like a great party. We'll have to decide what we're going to have to eat. Yes, I can see us planning this now. No, let's not just at the moment. Maybe on the next podcast. But thank you so much, Sam. I know we've had a little bit of a giggle, but we've also talked very seriously about the wonderful work that you and your colleagues do in the everyday world that you have to face, and the wonderful work that you do with teaching people their first aid. And that's really important too. I definitely will book myself on one of your courses. I hope that other people do, and we'll put all the details attached to this podcast so people can get hold of you and find out more about your maybe book onto courses that you're doing. So thank you so much for your time, and thank you for everything that you and your colleagues do. We do really appreciate you.
Thank you for asking, Matt, and it's been a lovely session. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you for joining me today. If you know someone or are someone who should join me, please get in touch. Meanwhile, believe in yourself, support others, and please stay safe.